Could have just kept it. They were in the lobby. You should have texted you to come.
I call the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum. Chair Scott, if you want to make your way to the desk.
It's already up.
First order of business is House File 1040. Wind and solar infrastructure is going to be the topic. And Chair Scott, since you are not a member of the committee, I will move your bill. I move that House File 1040 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And I think we can go ahead if you'd like to move your amendment. Actually, I'll do that for you. It's the DE2 in your packet, members, if you want to take a peek at that. And I will move the DE2 to get the bill in the shape that the author would like for today's discussion. But I think there is potentially a author's amendment, or excuse me, a additional amendment you'd like to add, Chair Scott.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, just in speaking with Mr. Kadelka from the MPCA, just an oral amendment, if that's okay with you and the committee. It would go, and we can have nonpartisan staff speak to it, but be on line 1.6 after solar photovoltaic modules. I believe remove the semicolon, and then it would say solar photovoltaic modules or system installation components. To that, so that would kind of match it up with the next line. On the wind energy conversion system component.
Ms. Taylor, if you could go through that for the committee with us, that'd be great.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would read on line 1.6 after modules, insert or system installation components. You would keep this semicolon, just to clarify.
Members, any questions on the oral amendment? Not seeing any. We can go ahead and vote on the amendment as amended. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Chair Scott, the bill is in the shape that you would like it as amended. If you would like to explain your bill, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing the bill. The bill started as a wind and solar stewardship program set up much like the e-stewardship program for recycling of computers and those sorts of things. And what we decided to do is just move this down and just strip it down basically to just having a prohibition on dumping wind and solar in landfills. There was a recent study that the legislature commissioned. Many of the stakeholders in the solar arena met over the interim and came out with a pretty lengthy report that I think the stakeholders are still trying to digest. And it had a little bit different approach than the stewardship program. And so we felt like at the very least what we could do is at least have a moratorium on these things being put in landfills right now. There are some harmful things in them that if they got into the groundwater could be harmful to human health. And so some of you know several years I worked on what, you know, affectionately became Peg's Pit, and it was a hazardous waste pit in my district, and it costs over $20 million to clean that up, and I just don't want that happening anywhere else if we can prevent it. And so that's basically what the bill does, and this just puts a moratorium on the dumping of that stuff right now.
Thank you, Chair Scott. I think next up is public testimony, and I think Kirk Kadelka from MPCA is first up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
want to thank the committee and the author for the work on this bill. We do support the bill. We appreciate the efforts on making sure solar components are recyclable for the reasons mentioned before, not only environmental and human health, but the economic abilities and the turning this into a circular economy and those valuable materials. As mentioned, the legislature required the MPCA to put together a report on solar recycling, and we have produced that. And one of the recommendations was a disposal ban on these components, not only the actual panels, but the other installation equipment. So thank you for that amendment to clarify that, because there are recycling available for both of these at this time in the quantities that we have today. However, the rest of the report does note that there will be an increase in the amount of material, solar panels, and the other installation components that will need additional capacity, and that's where the rest of the recommendations are needed, and that's regarding larger solar installations, building a system through our current permitting through PUC and the counties, and then for smaller under 1 megawatt facilities, creating a central management organization. Those items just aren't ready at this point. There are a couple more details that we need to work through a work group on, and we'll continue to do that over the interim, but then bring that back to the legislature if the legislation is needed or if it is something that could be done administratively. But do want to thank the committee and the author for your putting in what we can today in the report recommendations. So thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Next up, James Lenner, Conservation Minnesota. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure thing. Good afternoon, Chair Heinzman, members of the House Environment Natural Resources Committee. For the record, my name is James Lehner, the Policy Associate at Conservation Minnesota. We're an environmental advocacy organization representing members in all 87 counties who want to protect Minnesota's clean air, water, and land. And I want to acknowledge before I go into my more prepared remarks, there's a letter that you all should have gotten from us. It speaks to the bill prior to the DE. My comments today will reflect the bill as it is, the form it's in now. Here today now to speak in support of the amended House File 1040, which addresses end-of-life care for used solar panels and wind turbine blades. With the DE adopted today, we believe this bill is a good step for Minnesota. As we build out our clean energy grid, we should be sure that we have systems in place to handle this technology once it reaches the end of its usable life, and a ban on landfilling is the answer at this time. Last year, we participated in the MPCA's Solar Panel Reuse and Recycling Working Group, where we saw broad interest in making Minnesota's solar industry more sustainable. The working group made two recommendations, which you've just heard about, and you can find more detail on those in the recently published report from the agency. We support these recommendations and believe these policies would set us on the right path towards responsible end-of-life care for renewable energy technology. Our organization supports Minnesota's clean energy goals and believes in responsible, well-supported waste management systems. Adopting a landfill ban for renewable energy technology is a good, sensible step that meets both of these interests. Through this policy, we can ensure our clean energy system stays clean even when these panels and blades are out of use. In time, this change should serve to spur innovation in the recycling and reuse industries here in Minnesota, helping us develop our own circular economy. And we're thankful to the committee for having this hearing today, and especially thankful to Representative Scott for her willingness to work with stakeholders and advocates on this bill. We know this has been an important issue for her for many years now, and we're happy to be here alongside her in support of the bill as amended today. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions if the committee has any.
Next up, David Moberg. Please introduce yourself for the record, David, and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is David Moberg. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or MINSIA. We are a nonprofit trade organization. We represent over 170 member companies, including installers, developers, advocates, and even some manufacturers and recyclers. And there are over 5,000 Minnesota employees working in and around the Minnesota solar industry. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Representative Scott, both for bringing this bill forwards and, as already spoken to, being willing to work with stakeholders. We share the author's sentiment and fully support this bill as amended as it regards to solar panels. We were participants in and full participants in and support the MPCA working group recommendations, of which this landfill ban, as it relates to solar panels, is a necessary and critical start. We don't want to see any panels ending up in landfills or messing the environment or communities where Minnesotans live, so we are happy to continue this process both with this bill and then, if as needed, further legislative implementation of that report. In short, thank you, Representative Scott, and to the committee. Happy to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you. Next up, Madeline from American Clean Power Association. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Madeline Smarillo, and I represent the American Clean Power Association, or ACP. And I'm here to express the need for further amendment to this bill, which seeks to establish a moratorium on landfilling solar and wind infrastructure in Minnesota. ACP is the leading voice of today's multi-tech clean energy industry, representing energy storage, wind, utility-scale solar, clean hydrogen, and transmission companies. Safe and effective disposal of wind and solar infrastructure remains a top priority for industry, but we believe further amendment is necessary to achieve the desired outcomes of this bill. First, ACP recommends wind energy infrastructure be removed from this policy in its entirety. While solar stakeholders have had opportunity to discuss the implications for recycling solar policies, the same has not yet been done for wind. The implications for a disposal ban on wind infrastructure have not yet been defined. So without the removal of wind infrastructure, ACP strongly recommends the committee reject this legislation as it stands until it has been further amended. This legislation attempts to create a one-size-fit-all approach to renewable energy recycling and disposal. While we appreciate the support for this policy that has been voiced today, this approach does not take the unique circumstances of utility-scale generation into account. First and foremost, Minnesota currently lacks sufficient recycling infrastructure to support this legislation. According to the final report, the Solar PV Panel Reuse and Recycling Study conducted for MPCA by Eunomia, the nearest solar photovoltaic recycling facility is in Ohio. For solar, an immediate and comprehensive landfill ban would require utility-scale project owners to truck panels out of state for recycling or disposal, or store them on site until recycling infrastructure is available in state. Neither of these options is desirable given a couple of challenges. One, regional transportation of infrastructure for disposal can be cost intensive and prohibitive for projects that did not initially plan to do so. This adds unexpected financial burden to utility scale projects and ultimately impacts ratepayers whom these projects directly affect. Two, long-term waste storage on-site is commonly unpopular with local communities and is one of the scenarios this legislation was specifically meant to prevent. A clear and preferable alternative to this scenario is to implement a phased-in approach to a disposal prohibition of solar modules from utility-scale projects. This would mean separate treatment for panels from projects larger than 50 megawatts, allowing them to recycle limited percentages of waste by volume until the appropriate infrastructure is in place. A phased-in approach would give stakeholders the opportunity to expand recycling infrastructure, develop the necessary supply chains, and ensure that Minnesota is well-positioned to manage the increasing volume of solar panel waste sustainably in the future. ACP supports that the committee and Representative Scott are proactively working on this issue, but we must emphasize that we are not in a rush here. According to the Eunomia report from MPCA, demand for recycling solar modules is not expected to rise significantly until after 2040, when panels installed during this period of growth will begin reaching the end of their lifespans. In the interim, recycling costs continue to decline while competition and innovation grow each year, with more vendors entering the recycling market. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission is already exercising its authority over projects within its jurisdiction by mandating safe and effective disposal of solar infrastructure, including recycling requirements at decommissioning. By implementing a more measured approach, we can effectively address solar panel waste while fostering the continued growth of renewable energy in Minnesota. ACP recommends the committee consider further amendment to ensure the policy we adopt works for all those involved and preserves the potential for economic development through solar recycling in Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, as well as the committee's dedication to advancing effective clean energy policy. Thank you.
Thank you, and I will just look around the room and see if there's anyone in the audience today that would also like to testify. All right, seeing none, members, questions? I have one to lead off. Maybe MPCA could come back. Thank you. So as we were going through this discussion, I am curious, what are the primary material or chemical components in a solar panel or a turbine blade that we're trying to address in the legislation? Mr. Kadelka, if you had that, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record again, Kirk Kadelka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I can speak more on the solar because I have that information given our reports on it. So there are different types of recycling. The first is what we call limited, which is really looking at the aluminum frame and the glass, and we have that capacity in more places. Then in the U.S., there is more moving towards high level or comprehensive that we've referred to, and that's collecting not only the glass and aluminum, but valuable metals from the materials in a range of items. So those are the things that would be collected from the solar panels and the equipment. On the wind side, I don't have that information. I would have to get back.
So on the hazardous side, are there any hazardous materials or chemicals that we're also concerned about, Assistant Commissioner?
Chair and committee members, for the solar panels and that, a number of metals are hazardous substances. If we have issues where there would be releases of them, those would be of concern. And that's why we would like to make sure we keep them out of our landfills. As they deteriorate over time, they would be added into the leachate. It would make it more costly for landfills to handle it in the future.
So no chemicals of concern?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I would have to get back on the additional chemicals. Our report more focused on the recycling aspect of it and pulling out the materials in terms of the metals and others.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know when I first looked into doing this bill, and the contents of a solar panel may have changed since then, but there was cadmium. And I've heard in recent years, even the film has PFAS. I don't know if that's still true. If they've changed what they're using for the coating, but certainly that has been used in the past. And right now, the stuff is, a lot of it is, has been dumped in landfills, and we just want a moratorium on that.
I appreciate that, Chair Scott. Members, any other questions? All right. I'm not seeing any more, so it looks like we could possibly go to a renewal of the motion. Chair Scott, as you are not a member of the committee, I will go ahead and renew my motion that House File 1040, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Members, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Next, Representative Schultz, House File 253. If you could make your way to the desk. Representative Schultz, would you like to lay your bill over for possible inclusion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to lay the bill over for possible inclusion, and then once we're to that motion, I'd love to bring up the amendment.
All right. Go ahead. You have the, I believe in your packets, the A1 members, if you want to take a look at that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Schultz, if you
I
want
to move adoption of the A1 amendment.
All right, Representative Schultz has moved adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Your bill is as you would like it, Representative Schultz. So go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just begin by saying, for me, representing five rural counties that frankly have a ton of interests from those within agriculture, tons, dozens, hundreds of family farms across my community that have been in those families for generations. In the case of my family, it's five generations, but for folks across my area, it has been the entirety of the time that we've been there since we cleared the land originally a long time ago. And when we look at the public waters inventory, there are some needs that have been brought forward to me. I spent all of last Friday taking phone calls from my constituents with concerns for what has transpired in recent years. And specifically last year, and the challenges that are being created in my own community. And so with this bill, we're seeking a moratorium for 1 year on the work that's being done here, and the additional amendment helps provide clarity to all of those involved, because the number one thing that I'm hearing back home from the folks in my district is that there is confusion over the definitions and that it should be more in line with work that has been done previously. So I'm going to allow for testifiers to add to this conversation today, Mr. Chair, but I just appreciate the chance to have this bill before us. Thank you.
All right. So Representative Schultz stepping aside, we will have Joe, Executive Director, Minnesota Soybean Association. I'll let you introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for allowing us to present on this today. My name is Joe Smentek. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, an advocacy group that works on behalf of Minnesota soybean farmers. I'm also today talking in behalf of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association and the Farm Bureau as well. They are both sharing in the opinion that I have, that our organization has on this issue. We definitely appreciate the chance opportunities we've had to be a part of this discussion this year now and last year as well. The number one thing that we were looking for at the outset of this discussion after the Limbo Creek case is regulatory certainty for our farmers. Right now, after the Limbo Creek decision, our farmers are left without clear guidance as to what they needed to do in certain situations cleaning out a ditch. The Limbo Creek case was incredibly complicated. There was the work done on the original public waters inventory. There was a list that was created, a map that was created. Bodies of water were on a map, not on a list, meeting definitions, which all culminated in a question to the legislature that it was your duty to let everybody know what was going on. As pointed out by nonpartisan staff, the PWI is intended to provide maps and lists of water bodies that meet the statutory definition of public waters. And it is used by DNR, local governments, and others to identify public waters. That statement is incredibly true when it comes to my members. They rely on that map and the certainty of that map to know what they're supposed to do. We saw the definition that is being added to this, into the drainage law, used in the buffer law. So my farmers can easily look and say, yes, it is on a map. No, it isn't on a map. They know whether or not they need a buffer or not. With that guidance, they rapidly adopted and are almost at 100% compliance with the regulation. The language as it stands now, as it was passed last year, still leaves the maps as guidance, I guess. I don't know if it meets the definition. It's a public water. My farmers can't go out and look and decide, you know, easily if something was designated a body of significance by a commissioner back in the 1800s. They don't know exactly whether or not a stream drains 2 square miles or not. So giving them the certainty that the maps are what they need to use for these procedures is very important so that they can actually follow the law and don't find out when they are sued by an advocacy group halfway through a project like happened with the Limbo Creek case. So we definitely appreciate the amendment language and are happy to answer any questions that you guys may have.
Thank you very much. Next up, John, Minnesota Trout Unlimited.
Okay.
Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Lanchesky. I'm the executive director of Minnesota Trout Unlimited. We have several thousand members around the state, very interested in clean water. So here today, we followed this issue for a number of years, including the legislative compromise last year, which I'll just say seemed like a very common sense approach to really getting clarification and correcting errors that everybody acknowledged exists in the public waters inventory. So, the statute has been around a long time to define what a public water is. And then, unfortunately, there were errors by the agency staff people who created those maps about 45 some years ago. And as a result of those errors, omissions, we have some instances where essentially it ends up in litigation. So I just want to point out the waters typically omitted from that list, often are very small headwaters, including headwater stretches of trout streams. They play an important function in providing clean water downstream. So, as I said, this led to litigation, went to the appellate court, went to the state Supreme Court, and they ruled that the definition controls, not the flawed maps. And they urged the legislature to act, which it did last session. And like I said, we supported that common sense approach of clarifying it's the definition, and more importantly, getting the DNR to start taking action. They've had the ability to change those maps for 40-some years. They haven't taken it, and so now we're finally getting some progress, and we would like to see that work continue because as it stands, as this language of the bill, the position we're in, it actually takes us backward and maintains that confusion, lack of clarity, probably will encourage more litigation. So we would urge a no vote on the bill. Thank you.
Next up, Randall, Conservation Assistance and Regulations Section Manager, DNR. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Randall Donine, Section Manager within the Division of Ecological and Water Resources. Public waters are held in trust by the state for the benefit of all Minnesotans. As such, the DNR is charged with regulating activities within those public waters to ensure the collective public interest is protected. Currently, a public water basin, a water course, and a wetland is determined to be public if it meets the characteristics that are outlined in the statutory definition, Minnesota Statute 103G.005, Subdivision 15 and 15A. Although the presence or absence on the PWI doesn't determine if a water body is public, the PWI is an important tool, both for the DNR, local units of government, landowners, and others to identify where public water is. It's also important to note the inventory does determine if water is subject to the buffer law. In 2024, the legislature directed DNR to update the PWI and appropriated $1 million a year for 8 years to complete this task. I can provide an update on DNR's plans and what we've been able to accomplish so far on this. And lastly, I'll put a note on the amendment, the A1 amendment that was introduced. So far, we've developed a web page and a gov delivery system for the public water inventory update project. We currently have over 4,000 people subscribed to that gov delivery email system. If you haven't already, I would highly suggest that you go to that web page, review the information, and sign up for the updates. Everybody will get noticed on any part of the project if they're signed up for that gov delivery update. We did also hold a webinar with a question and answer period back in October. We had over 300 attendees to that webinar. We couldn't get to all the questions and answers during the webinar, so we did post on the website a document that contains all of the questions and answers that we got during that webinar. We've met with several interest groups to discuss the project and get feedback. We've met with the Drainage Work Group, the Association of Minnesota Counties Annual Conference, Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisors Meetings, the Northern Counties Land Use Board, and others as well. And I believe we're going to be going to the Red Board next week as well. There's been a lot of interest in this project, and we've been engaging very heavily as we go forward. We've hired the 5 hydrologists that will be completing this work. We have 1 lead hydrologist and then 1 regional hydrologist specialist in each of the 4 DNR regions across the state. We're currently working with Minute to complete the technology review and train the team. We envision that we'll have the technology and the team trained by May 2025. The process that we'll use to review these water bodies and make determinations will be corrections. It's not a complete overhaul of the PWI that was done in the 1980s. That was an amazing amount of work that was done in the 1980s, and it is a valuable tool. It is not perfect, and an update is needed. The we'll be identifying areas that need to be corrected. If it meets the statutory definition and it's not in the inventory, we'll add it. If it's on the inventory but it doesn't meet the statutory definition, we'll remove it. And it's only corrections. The process that we intend to use for identifying these corrections and making them will be, first, a general notice before we begin working in any county. The general notice will go out to local units of government. The local newspapers will send it out through the gov delivery. We'll post it in the Environmental Quality Board Monitor and in the State Register. And it's really an opportunity to let people, let us know if there's areas that they think need to be looked at for potential corrections. The team will then begin reviewing all the potential corrections in the county. Oh, I should back up. We envision going county by county, but there will be multiple counties being worked on at any one time. And then, so the team will go and we'll review those corrections and we'll generate what we're calling a preliminary correction map and list. Once we have that done, we will again give notice to everybody who we gave the first notice to, plus landowners that are adjacent to any of the corrected water bodies that we're looking at. After we give that notice to everybody, we'll wait at least 30 days, and then we'll be holding a public meeting in the county. The public meeting will allow an open house question and answer period, a presentation, and then public input. After the public meeting, we'll have it again at least 30 days, maybe more, before we close the public comment period on all these preliminary corrections. Then we will review all the public comments we've got. We'll go back and the team will make any adjustments that may be needed based on the feedback. There might be follow-up that would be needed, you know, additional desk reviews, field visits, follow-up conversations as needed to government officials and landowners. Then we'll finalize the order by county by county by issuing a final order. The final order will identify any of the corrections that are made, and it will respond to any of the comments that were received as part of the public comment period. If any individual feels that we have erred, they could appeal the final order to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about the amendment. This amendment would modify the definition of public water, shifting it from the statutory definition to its presence on the PWI. You know, this shift would modify years of interpretation, and the on-the-ground practice could leave some public waters without protections that the statute affords. I think the trout stream tributaries is a good example of that. The DNR has an existing process for correcting errors in the PWI, and this bill would prohibit that until 2027. Thank you, Chair.
Lastly, we have Aaron Clems, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
Chair Heintzman, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Clems. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, or MCEA. We're a public interest law firm and advocacy organization with over 50 years of experience defending Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. MCEA opposes HF 253, which would delay any correction to the public waters inventory for over 2 years and require a report on this modification process. MCA opposes this bill because delay has no benefit and because the proposed report is unnecessary. And I'll talk about the A1 amendment in a minute as well. The PWI, or Public Waters Inventory, is an important resource for all Minnesotans because it makes clear at a glance what waters belong to the state and its collected citizens. It's both a list of waters and a map that shows the many lakes, rivers, streams, creeks, and ditches that all Minnesotans own collectively as public resources. With that public water designation comes important protections. Public waters are defined in statute. The A1 amendment is kind of puzzling to me since the PWI map is and list are determined by applying that statutory definition. Drainage proposals, and that would be the particular impact of that A1 amendment, that affect public waters should require a public waters work permit. In combination, the A1 and HF253's original language would delay a process to make the PWI more accurate. That's important because the courts and the DNR have implemented the public waters protections based on the definition that's currently in statute. There have been and continue to be instances where the PWI list and map do not accurately reflect the statutory definition, and that's what this process is intended to correct. For example, in 2017, 640 stream miles of waterways were removed from the PWI by the DNR. The DNR has acknowledged that some of those deletions were errors and committed to a court to correct that. This is one example of why it's important to preserve the definition in statute and to correct the PWI, because we know that there are hundreds of miles of waterways that are public waters under statute but are not currently reflected in the PWI map and list. And in some cases, they're on the map but not on the list. And in some cases, they're on the list but not on the map. All of those are reasons to fix it. In debate last year over the bill that Representative Purcell carried and that is reflected in statute now, several testifiers and members of both legislative bodies expressed a clear preference for updating the PWI list and map to express any change in the definition of public waters. In the end, the 2024 legislature did both. It fixed the definition, and it also allocated $1 million per year over an 8-year period for accurate review and update to the PWI using existing technology. When originally this map was built in 1981-82, this was, this is an order of magnitude difference in technology in terms of what we have today. With satellite photography, LIDAR, and other data, it's pretty common for hydrologists involved in drainage projects, for example, to immediately ascertain how much of the drainage area is affected by a drainage project. The idea that there's a lot of confusion about what counts as a public water is belied by practice. The first step in a drainage project is usually to have a hydrologist tell you what area is affected by it. Pausing DNR's work on updating the PWI and correcting it will only make it harder for individuals to know whether a water body that they may be concerned with meets the definition of a public water. The sooner DNR is able to complete this work, the more accurate the PWI will be, and this will ensure that all Minnesotans know what is and what is not deemed a public water based on what the statute requires. Because there's no benefit from a delay in this work and no need for a report, MCA opposes House File 253. And since there's a clear need to preserve the statutory definition of public water due to inaccuracies in the current list and map, MCEA opposes the A1 amendment. Thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else in attendance that would like to go ahead? Please introduce yourself from the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate an opportunity to share some thoughts on the bill and the amendment. My name is Steve Morse. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We're a statewide coalition of more than 70 environmental conservation groups and other organizations that share our values and belief in our strategies. I did include a letter in the packet, so I won't repeat what's in the letter. But I want to say a couple of things. There's a new amendment. A1 that came in, I believe it was posted after the deadline for our comments. So that's why I'm here today to say them orally. Minnesotans, I don't think I have to explain to any of you, but Minnesotans highly value their water resources. It is the unifying resource that we all gather around and that we all believe in. And Minnesotans want their lakes, rivers, and streams to be clean, and they want them to be protected. Even the little streams, because what people understand is those little streams flow into a bigger stream, which flow into a river, and those are the resources and the lakes that we, the rivers and lakes that people value so highly, not to mention the groundwater supplies. This policy on the public waters inventory is a foundational policy for protecting our waters in the state, so it's a critical piece of legislation. It is our belief that the legislation from last year will create clarity and efficiency. I've been around watching these water wars for many years, and what happened when they were developed back in the 70s and 80s, they're done, as Mr. Clemens just said, without the benefit of a lot of the technology we have now. There were no computers, folks. I was around. There were no computers, not to mention all the other technology that we use. And so you can imagine the number of errors that were in the mapping of the statutory definition. So instead of correcting the problems from 40-plus years ago, what this bill, with its amendment, does is it locks in those flaws instead of addressing those flaws. And we would argue that it's much better to use current science, much updated science, and the statutory definitions of what we've had in law for many decades to actually identify these public waters in a map that can aid people in their regulation and use of the maps. So MEP and our member organizations that we represent takes a strong position against this bill, and we ask you to not move it forward and to stay with the policy that you passed last year. Thank you.
I think we have one more. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. Chair Heintzman, members of the committee, my name is Britta Torkelson. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Rural Counties as well as the Association of Minnesota Counties. The Association of Minnesota Counties and Minnesota Rural Counties would like to express our support for House File 253 as amended to restore regulatory certainty that was envisioned for the state when the PWI was created. In 1979, the Minnesota Legislature directed the Minnesota DNR to create the PWI to serve as an official record of all the public waters in the state with the intention of helping to end the proliferation of litigation over which waters are subject to public waters regulations. The inventory process involved extensive engagement of state and local governments and public and, in some cases, judicial review. Government entities, businesses, and the public have relied on the PWI to direct work and obligations for decades. The qualifications by which a water should be evaluated is laid out in Chapter 103G.005, Subdivision 15. A water body or course that meets the criteria should be designated as a public water and placed on the inventory and subject to the applicable regulations. The DNR has statutory authority to maintain and update the inventory and was appropriated funding to do so at a statewide update of the PWI using modern tools and technology. All Minnesotans must be mindful of potential impacts to public waters and comply with laws protecting those waters. The state previously recognized the importance of regulatory certainty for proper application of and compliance with the law. We deserve to have a well-established inventory of all public waters in Minnesota to reliably fulfill our obligations in accordance with the law. The statutory change made last year took us backwards. We support this proposal, adding certainty back to the statute. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm not seeing anyone else. So, members, questions? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to all the testifiers. I think we all have the same end goal in mind. I heard that there's a lot of confusion, there's uncertainty, the proliferation of litigation. So my question to the bill author is, how does delaying this process helping with clarifying those uncertainties?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Purcell. One of the things that it will allow us to do is to engage more people and to have more input before formal changes are made, which is at the heart of why we bring forward this bill today.
Representative Purcell, I think I heard in some of the testimony today that the language that was passed was compromise language, and I would just say, as the lead in the committee during that time, I don't remember having anyone approach me on what I might want or not want or to potentially address some of the things that are addressed in Representative Schultz's bill. But go ahead, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard the DNR lay out a robust public process. So if we're delaying this a year, I beg to differ with your response that this allows for more public engagement. Maybe there's plans for public engagement that aren't in statute. Typically, we get told we don't get to do the rulemaking. So if you know of a different public engagement process that will happen instead in that year, I'd love to hear about it.
Representative Schultz.
No answer to that particular question.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. First of all, I want to say this amendment is a work of art, and I mean, I really do appreciate it. We defined in statute what a public water was, demanded an inventory, made a map, and then we're saying the definition of the public water is now what's on the map, and therefore there can be no new public waters. I mean, it truly is like wildly creative solution to a really terrible problem. I mean, I really do. I commend you for it. It's a tautology unlike any I've seen here before to try to avoid any responsibility whatsoever from anything that's been done since 1979. So I appreciate the creativity to the solution. So, Representative Purcell mentioned this, but I do think it's important. You know, the two biggest things that were heard in the testimony in support of this is that regulatory uncertainty is the problem. The problem is uncertainty. The court said the legislature needs to fix this. We don't understand what public waters are. We need a clearer definition, although the definition, you know, as has been mentioned, that you're offering is not a definition of public water. But it doesn't seem to me to answer the question of we fixed the court said to fix this and we fixed it. And then we were going to make a new map based on the fix, which is what we were supposed to do. And based on the testimony in support of this bill, it is the thing that people are waiting for. They want us to make a map. The court said, legislature, fix it. We fixed it. We're trying to make the map. The map is how we will get certainty for the farmers who want to know what the regulatory framework is. So I have to ask you again, how are you possibly solving any of those problems by delaying it and then also requiring that only that those waters that already exist on the map can be considered part of the public water inventory?
Representative Schultz, do you want to take that? Otherwise, I know there were a number of testifiers that had different feelings.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I'd welcome Mr. Smentek back to the desk, and I'll just say thank you, Representative Finke. I've never fancied myself as an artist, so I...
A true work of art.
Representative Finke.
Gold star, right?
To your testifier, Representative Schultz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finke, I don't believe that's what the amendment actually does. It doesn't lock into time or place the map as written today. The authorizing language for the map, as been stated by many of the testifiers, the DNR's had the ability to change, alter the map for decades now, and they have. Streambank Slough, I'm on the Planning Commission of Blue Earth County. We've had streams move. They update these maps all the time. So that list of definitions that's there would continue to guide the DNR in updating the maps, removing streams, adding streams. That list of definitions would still do that. But for drainage law, where was the basis of this, the Limbo Creek case, that updated map, current map, would be the controlling map in my reading of this. So it's that continually updating the map that will protect the waters. We're not in any way, shape, or form asking that the definitions something be stricken, something be taken off the map. We're asking that we don't have, at the end of the day, $8 million of updated maps that a farmer can't rely on, a county can't rely on, look at it and say, yep, it's a public water, no, it's a public water. At the end of the day, we'll be left with a tool that is not effective at telling us an answer as to whether or not something is a public water because it isn't exclusively controlling. The list would still control. And the list can still control for what's on that map and not on that map. And we would urge the DNR, if there's If there's known things that should be on that map, they should update that process. They should do that. They've had that ability, and my farmers can't control what the DNR does or does not do.
Representative Finke.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to ask our nonpartisan about that, because as I read this amendment, it strikes the definition, the previous definition of public water, and says a public water is defined by being on the public water inventory. So would they be able to add items to the public water inventory?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, on the A1 amendment, there is a change to public, the definition of public waters for purposes of the drainage law, Chapter 103E, and that would be defined as those waters that are on the public water inventory. And with the underlying bill, the DNR would be prohibited from making any changes until July 1st, 2027.
Representative Finke.
Thank you. That was how it seemed to me to be being characterized by our other testifiers, so I appreciate the clarification. I am not a farmer. I don't know. It seems to me like there was it was testified to that the creation of the public waters inventory was to prevent litigation. That to me seems like a problem. It should be to protect public water. Water is a public good. We've heard multiple times that litigation is the problem, and litigation shouldn't be the problem we are trying to solve. The problem we are trying to solve here in this committee is the protection of public water, public resources, air, soil. These things don't belong to anyone. Water passing through a ditch does not belong to the farmers. These are public matters that we need to be responsible for, and this seems like just an attempt to continue to make things less certain to avoid responsibility, rather than to follow the law, which we passed when we were told to pass a law to clarify it, which we did. So those are my comments, and I will pass it back.
Representative Finke, I have several head of cattle, horses, and I don't consider myself a farmer either, so I appreciate those questions, and I do appreciate all the testimony today thus far. I know there's going to be more questions, but it does sound like there is some frustration among those that are, I think, arguably stakeholders that are farmers, that there are some challenges with the law as it was passed. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this is a great case study in how laws are made in Minnesota. It is the reality in this state of the power of special interests. So exactly as has been mentioned, exactly the same words were used last year. We need to get rid of uncertainty. We need more certainty. We need science. Going to take money to do that, so we got that. But people don't like that because that's change. We're actually going to solve a problem. So the resistance begins from the well-off and the well-connected who always have access to power in this building. You don't have to be a farmer to have comment on this. You have to be a member of the public. It's the public that we represent, and it's the public waters that we're trying to protect. Now, I'm sure that this is maybe not going to make it out of this committee. Maybe it will, but it might make it out of the Senate. So I publicly call on the Walz-Flanagan administration to veto any bill that has changes to the public water inventory that was passed last year with the Senate and the governor's office.
Representative Hansen, I'm just going to point out, as we're kind of going down the trail of who we represent and so on, that yes, we each have constituencies in our districts. It's different from one part of the state to the other. And there's a lot of also special interests that come to the Capitol with priorities as well. And it's sometimes challenging to figure out what are the best policies to put forward. And sometimes there are changes that do need to be made as we go along. And this maybe a change that needs to be made. I hope that we would give the bill an opportunity. It's being laid over to discuss what maybe there could be agreement on and to represent some of the concerns that are being voiced here today and issues that are being represented in Representative Schultz's bill. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the DNR come back up?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Manager, is it Doneen?
Yes, Doneen, Randall
Doneen. Doneen. Okay, thanks. So I guess I have two questions. And one of them is this work has already started, right? So what happens to all that work should this be delayed until 2027? That work is already ongoing. Like, does it stop? Does it add to those? Does that work continue for more years? What happens to that work that's happening right now?
Manager Doneen.
Thank you, Chair Hansman. As I said, when the bill just passed, you know, at the end of legislation, you know, we didn't like have a plan in place at that time. And so we did spend most of the summer and fall developing those plans, engaging in an outreach, begin the hiring process to get these people on. Everyone has been hired. Training has begun. The technology should be available shortly. If the bill were to pass, we obviously couldn't make any of those final orders that we were envisioning, and I think it would be a little disingenuous to begin large public processes on public revisions until that was done as well. So it would, you know, the team is hired. They would continue to identify corrections and review those, but we wouldn't have any formal processes until after 2027. And so it would potentially delay or make it longer than the 2032 timeline that we had envisioned last year.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That's really helpful information on how that's happening right now. So then we talked about how, like, just generally the DNR does make updates to public waters, like streams do meander, dams break, things change, water moves, we all know that. If in this work that you're doing over the next couple of years, should this bill pass, and you do find that a stream has changed or that something has been drained legally or not, would you be able to update the public waters inventory or no? Because as I read lines 1.17 and 1.18 before being engrossed in House File 253, it says you may not modify the public waters inventory. So would you be able to make those routine updates that we were just talking about should this become law?
Manager Doneen.
Thank you. My read of it is no, we wouldn't be able to make any revisions to the inventory until after July 1, 2027.
Lee Fisher.
Thank you, Chairman Heintzman. I've had the opportunity over the last many years that I've been here is to watch what's been happening on the water issue here in terms of what's a public water and what isn't. And a couple of things that are happening right now is in terms of the amendment that came through, it feels like it could be an attempt to make sure that in the future, if we found public waters out there, they could be added to the public water inventory, but if they're public waters that need protecting, we would not be able to protect them through the drainage law, which would mean the buffers. That's what it feels like when I'm hearing the amendment out there. That to me is concerning because I keep on hearing we all want to protect our waters until it comes to the point of making sure that we've got something that's a public water that, oh, that kind of got missed before because it got missed, we're really not going to protect it. We value wanting to have clean water here. That's critical in our state. One of the things that's also bothered me about the process that we're going through is over time we have found errors and taken and removed waters that should not have been on the inventory. That's never been a problem. However, when we find these same errors to make a water public, everybody acts like the sky is falling. We should be able to follow the same thing because otherwise we've created a double standard. What we've done is we've made it easy to take waters off the inventory, rightfully so, But at the same time, when it comes to saying we should be protecting these waters, including them, oh, we can't use that same standard, even though that's really the standard that all of Minnesota wants us to follow. That is why I'm having problems with this, because we're setting it up and giving the opportunity for what should be public waters that should be protected to lose those protections going forward. And that's all I'm asking is saying, use the same standards, keep the process going that we're having right now, because we're going to have uncertainties out there. There's going to be changes that are going to add some and take some off. We should use the same standards across the board. I don't feel this bill does that.
So, members, coming to the end here, Representative Schultz, if you want to close us out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the discussion and engagement on this issue today. I think that it's important that we seek a consensus on this issue as we move forward. I know that there's some diverging opinions here, and I just will really look forward to this continued dialogue throughout this legislative session, and I really want to appreciate each of the testifiers who took the time to share their perspectives and the work that is continuing to be done on this issue over a long period of time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz, do you renew your motion that House File 253 as amended be laid over?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
The bill is laid over. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. So I will close us out. We are adjourned.